you don't believe me, you can look it up hundreds and hundreds of years ago. You see, the Moors conquered Sicily. And the Moors are niggers. So you see, way back then, Sicilians were like wops from northern Italy. They all had blonde hair and blue eyes. But, well, then the Moors moved in there and, well, they changed the whole country. They did so much fucking with Sicilian women, that they changed the whole bloodline forever. That's why blonde hair and blue eyes became black hair and dark skin. You know, it's absolutely amazing to me to think that to this day, hundreds of years later, that that Sicilians still carry that nigger gene. Now, this... No, I'm quoting history. It's written. It's a fact. It's written.
I love those guys.
Your ancestors are niggas.
Hey.
Yeah. And your great, 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 great grandmother fucked a nigger. Oh. Yeah. And she had a half nigger kid. Now, if that's a fact, tell me, am I lying? You're part eggplant.
Hey. You're a cantaloupe.
It goes when you tell the truth. When you tell the truth, Christopher Walken didn't like that. And Dennis Hopper, that was the greatest scene I've ever seen. Wow. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, where we can say nigger, or we can say spick, or we can say gook, or we can say Aryan, or we can say Mr. Negro. We can do what we want because we're free. I'm free. I don't know about you, but I'm free. Pretty much so. I found out by the neighbor that squawked to the planning commission about my sign. Yeah, I knew it was. I knew who it was. Only one. He's been indicted. He's been guilty of felonies from fraud and all kinds of stuff. But he's got money. He got money. Anyhow, it's the November the 23rd, 2015. And boy, this month is going fast. Wait a minute. This week is Thank Your Mother and Father Week Day. Yeah, Thanksgiving. That's when you give thanks to your mother, your father, and all your ancestors. Or you wouldn't be here. Or if you were here, you might not be white. So instead of spending the afternoon or morning or whatever, praying to spooks in the sky that don't exist, that they did something for you. Fuck that. The genes in your blood body is what did it for you, and you thank your ancestors. Mama, daddy, and grandpa and grandma. You got it? All right. You want to argue about it? Well, if you can prove your spooks in the sky, I might change that a little bit. But you're not going to. You're not going to. What's sad is white men getting down on their knees to a non-existent God. And tell me about it. I did it for 2 or 3 decades of my life. Yeah. I had it all wrong because, my parents, instead of saying, thank us for begotten you, they said, you go to church and get down on your knees to pray to this vicious, horrible God of the Old and New Testament. Yeah, so I'm not criticizing you for doing it. Because I did it ever since I was a little kid, till I finally got goosed and I walked straight. Yeah. And I'll tell you the book that changed my life. Because I finally figured out how screwed up the world was. And I finally decided what was causing it, or at least most of it. I was sitting in my office with the lights turned off in the dark, thinking. And I came up with the idea that the problem is not that we don't have enough religion. This religion is what's causing all our problems, or a hell of a lot of them. And I read this book, and you might guess what it is. I'll tell you maybe today during the show, or maybe tomorrow. Yeah. The one that got me started to get off the track with this Christ insanity. Well, I can't find it around here, but I think it was written back in the 18th century, if that gives you a clue. But I think I know what happened to it. You never loan out books unless you tie a chain to them so you can pull them back in. And a few years ago, I made a promise to myself never to loan out books. People can get these books themselves. Well, remember our co-host we had in here for quite a long time? Well, I started loaning him books. And he got quite a number of my books. I tried only to send 3 or 4 at a time. But then there was supposedly a flood over there in Illinois, and so he lost the books. And those were replaceable books, so he never replaced them to me. And then he disappeared. So you think you know somebody? You know them for quite a while. You like them. And then they're gone. You just can't depend on anybody. Yep. So anyhow, I'll come up with the name of the book. Or I may still find it here in my labyrinth of library books. I like to get some of my books, especially ones that you may find a little expensive on Amazon and eBay. Go to Abe Books, abe.com. They've got lots of books, and if they got the book, you can get it extremely cheap. I bought books for $1, even 50 cents from those people, and they paid the postage. Well, under the new slavery, which do you choose? A serf? Would you rather be called a serf or a peasant? Maybe a serf is better. But that's what we are now. There's millions of people out there arguing on the radio, TV about voting for some other serf. We need another serf. That last serf wasn't too good. In fact, you've got no control. You got no control at all. I will say one thing for ISIS, they've got some control. They just roll into town and take over. If you don't like it, they... You know, I've heard, though, they got a big video section. They spend a lot of money on propaganda. And according to what I heard, I think there's a book been written about it, all this cutting off heads is pretty much a myth. That would be a good way for them to build the indication of power, but it's also a good way for their opposition to make them horrible, and we got to eliminate every last one of them. But they're like the Christian crusaders. Most of them didn't believe in Christianity or Jesus or God. And the reason that most of them went on the crusades was to get the booty. The booty. Yeah, that's what they went down the Middle East for. They didn't go down there to find Jesus' tomb or anything like that. Most of them went out there for money. And that's, of course, what it is. Whether it's Muhammad or whether it's Jesus or whether it's Kung Fu or whatever, at the bottom of the list of objectives, it's, well, let's look for the baby Jesus grave, but along the way, let's steal everything we can steal. We got to pay for the trip, you know. Yeah. Well, it was around 20 degrees this morning again. A little cool out there. Yeah. Not a good evening to be running around, I'll tell you that. And my one dog, the Siberian Husky, she's got so much fur on her, she goes out and lays in the snow and goes to sleep. But we got a little dachshund running around here. He freezes his ass off every time he goes out the front door. I saw something interesting with my aviary. I'm feeding the birds. We've got a big old, we had some big, beautiful blue jays came around yesterday. But I was watching this morning, we've had this big old woodpecker come around for several days now. And he was in there, we got this block seed in a little cage. It's up about 10 feet off the ground. And he's in there hammering away at that seed, and it was falling on the ground, and all the sparrows were on the ground eating it. Now, I don't know whether you could say that that was a benevolent thing by the woodpecker or whether it was just a secondary result. But it does show that either naturally or unnaturally in the wild that there's some things that happen that benefits everybody. So we got to look at that too with races, because not everything the non-white races do is bad for us. Yeah, that's right. Not everything. And when they're not doing something that's bad for us, and it may help us in the long run, we should recognize that, study it, think about it. Yeah. I can't believe how spastic the news media, the corporate news media, is going, and the politicians. I can understand the politicians because it gives them some power. Going crazy over this ISIS situation and this Paris, France situation. Well, there's more people get killed on the highway in a few weeks or a couple of months probably than got killed and murdered in Paris. I was listening to another guy talk about that. I mean, you know, they go absolutely crazy over a few people getting killed or murdered. Supposedly by people you don't like. When Chicago, over a few weeks period, will have that many people murdered for no reason at all, other than somebody's pissed off at them. One nigga is pissed off at another nigga. It just seems right. So, I mean, you know, I even heard a nigger talking about it. He said, wait a minute. my soul brothers are being murdered every night of the week, man. And they don't go crazy like this, you know. According to the way they're running it over there in Paris, after a weekend of black KKK activity in Chicago, the whole military would come down on Chicago. They'd ring that city, and they'd just start marching in towards the ghetto and take care of business. So it's amazing how crazy it is and how foolhardy it is the way that people react to this stuff. But you know as well as I do, it's all based on fear. Get everybody fearful. Well, I don't think they've scared the French. The French people went right back out partying. I got to hand it to the French people. Now here, they got old ladies looking under their bed for ISIS, and we're thousands of miles away from Paris. I think I saw one. Well, I did too. He's running a liquor store downtown. Yeah. Get the cops. Get that guy. And the campuses are going crazy. They're on a stop racism crazy. They're going crazy. Now, of course, the people behind this that manipulate this, they're not crazy. They know exactly what they want to do. They always know what they want to do. And it's so easy to get these stupid students, white and black and brown and yellow, to go crazy. One thing that's interesting, it seems like the Asians are the last to go crazy. Or maybe not go crazy at all. They just go about their studies. But the blacks and the browns and the whites go crazy. So pretty soon they're probably going to start burning down these universities. Well, they're not learning anything. Why not? I mean, you know, most of them don't go there for hard science. I would say keep the universities for hard science and burn down the rest of the university. Social this and social that. Basket weaving. Yeah. I watched a little documentary put together by a private citizen who was a veteran of World War II. And he was in the Navy when they landed at Tarawa down in the South Pacific. And they showed a whole bunch of the real footage. Hundreds and hundreds of GIs, Marines, and Navy, Army died there. A lot of them died through the stupidity of the tactics of the commanders, which happens in all wars. It's political. The guy gets to be a big officer. He's appointed because his father was a big officer, something like that. But anyhow, they screwed up and didn't get it right, and they dumped these troops in these landing crafts out beyond the reef. And the damn water was about 20 feet deep on the other side of the reef to get to the beach. So hundreds of Americans just drowned to death. Plus they were getting strafed from three sides. The Japanese had them in crossfire. The Japanese had built defenses on that Tarawa Atoll that were unbelievable. They had pillboxes that were 20 feet high. Well, one thing that did help the GIs a little bit when they started, after all the death and carnage of getting onto the sand on the beach, the Japanese commander, was worried that they'd get overrun because there was two parts of the atoll, and the other part that he wasn't on was the airport where they could land all their Japanese Zeros. So he sets out to move his headquarters over to the other side of the island. And in leaving his command post with all his senior officers, somehow something exploded, killed them all. I'm not sure whether he said it was American 5 inches from the destroyers, or whether it was an ammo dump there by their headquarters or what. But right in the height of the battle for Tarawa, the Japanese general in command gets killed. So the Japanese operate a lot like the Germans. You have a strong guy at the head, and he calls all the shots, and if he's not around, now what do I do? Octoon, what's I do, man? My general is gone. Which you must give Americans credit for. They tend to jump into the lurch and take over. Anyhow, so then that allowed finally all the troops to get through and get onto the island or the atoll. And thing is, there was 2,000 or 3,000, I believe they said, Americans died on those beaches, and only a few hundred have ever been brought back. You see, U.S. government, after they get what they want, they don't give a shit. The politicians don't give a shit. They brought a few token bags of bones back, but that's about it. So this guy was down there. He was in his 80s now. He's probably dead by now, because that was 2008. Working with the government there on the atoll to get these beaches dug up and get all the bones and get them back and get them into graves, at least for the families back here in the States. And also, he was pissed off because he went down there and all the areas where the guys had died was just covered with crap and garbage and actual shit. So he was going to help build a processing plant down there to clean up the place. But he made several comments too about sort of being anti-war, and these people get this flash too late in their lives that war is a racket. It's nothing but a racket. Follow the money. The Japanese were doing fine until we started to the French and the English to push them back, losing some of their trading partners and losing the sources of their oil because Japan didn't have any oil. We pushed Japan right into the war, and then, of course, the Tojoites went crazy and said, we got to attack Pearl Harbor. So the Germans did the same thing. Instead of just hanging loose there, Hitler declared war on the United States because we had declared war on Japan. It's all a bunch of bullshit. So all these guys are, most of them in their 20s, maybe 30s. Some of them were in their teens. They died for that piece of bullshit land, that atoll, Tarawa, and Guadalcanal, and all that stuff. We never learn. White man never learns. He wants to fight. He wants to fight. Just give me any old fight, Zog. Dream up a war, and I'll go get killed for you. I don't know what to say. But it was a very good little documentary. You can get it I think it was YouTube. Return to Tarawa. It's a good lesson on staying home. Go to Canada or something. Or it might have been on Roku. I'm not quite sure. But anyhow, you can find it. Return to Tarawa. One of our subscribers asked me, because I'd mentioned physical, being able to read people physically, body language. It's very important to understand that, because I was talking about Putin. And if you're observant enough, you can see that something wrong with that boy. Either he's got some kind of an inferiority complex, that he tries to overcompensate or something. I'm not saying everything he does is bad. In fact, a lot of stuff he does is good. But I am saying that, like I've said before, you can't trust any of these people. And if he's got a psychological problem, he's liable to show up at the wrong time and he might press the button, you know. So that's, you got to notice it when he's talking. He looks down, he looks away, and he rarely looks in somebody's eyes. And so that's something for you to watch. Now, you can go to Abe Books, or you can go to Amazon, or you can go to eBay, and you can find all the books on body language you want. There's a lot of them out there. And there's a lot of free stuff. I don't think we've got anything on our website about body language, but you might want to go up there and look around. But if you know body language, it can save you from a lot of problems. And you can tell whether you're dealing with a fraud or a weak person or a determined person or what else, you know, by watching them. Even watch them the way they cross their legs in a meeting. Someone wants to, he's bored with the meeting, he'll tend to shift his legs pointing towards the door. Someone who wants to, is really interested in what you've got to say, will lean forward in the chair towards you. One that don't believe a goddamn word you're saying, he tilts back. And also a guy that's lying or exaggerating will tend to put their hand over their mouth. I mean, not every second, but they'll tend during a conversation to put their hand over their mouth. Well, there's a whole bunch of simple explanations for this stuff, and you need it. You need it. And you can use it, turn it around and use against them. If they're interrogating you, you can do certain things that they're trained in body language. And if you know body language, and you know they know, you can reverse the process and send signals that they don't understand or they misread. I think I've got a whole program on detecting liars up on the website. If not, I've got it on my computer and I can send it out to you. It's quite a long program, but these are things, you know, if the right wing were studying all this kind of stuff instead of buying guns that just gets them in trouble, they'd be farther ahead. I'm a people watcher. I've always been a people watcher, and my mother was a people watcher. I guess that's where I got it from. I can sit on a park bench and watch people all day, watch their mannerisms, watch how they react, watch how they talk to people and so forth. It's quite an interesting hobby. I don't do it every day, but try it sometime. People are very interesting. You know, I was watching a little documentary, too, the other day about Rock Hudson. You know, the East Coast and West Coast knew he was a homosexual long time before anybody else. The middle part of the country, they never catch on till later, most of them. You know, like Liberace. Why, hell, he was almost impossible not to understand that he was homosexual. But still, there were people, most of the old ladies in the Middle West swore up and down, oh, no, he's not some homosexual. But Rock Hudson, he wasn't such a nice guy. Well, like I say, what happened was he got sued by his live-in lover. And they decided for the live-in lover, $21 million. That's how bad they thought that Rock Hudson had treated him, because Rock Hudson, even after he had got AIDS, he never told this guy. And we don't know how many other people Rock Hudson had sex with if he was promiscuous. But this guy that he had living with him for all this time, because Rakuzin didn't tell him, didn't warn him, sued him. Otherwise, he wouldn't have sued him. And he got a judgment of $21 million. Now, that was being appealed. I don't know whether that appeal has been heard or not, because that documentary was several years old. But now they're stiffening up the law on that stuff. If somebody is HIV positive and they don't warn the person they're having sex with, they're going to go to jail. And if it's bad enough, and if it's enough people, you're going to go to jail for a long time. So anyhow, that's beside the point, but I just thought I'd let you know. One was funny, that was on a Phil Donahue show, one of the few talk show guys I respect, or respected. He's not on anymore. But the guy said, the homosexual that had lived with Rock Hudson said, right at the end, when Phil said, "You got anything else to say?" He said, "I don't like men anymore." The homosexual. So I guess he's bisexual. He's going to get off the man thing, go back to the women. Now, I don't want you to think I sit around all day and watch movies, but I do like movies. I've always liked movies. I learn a lot from movies. I don't care what they say. The World Made Straight. I believe that's the title. The World Made Straight. I watched it on Netflix. That was about, it was down south, and the film was, I don't know, probably in the 80s. But it was about a situation where way back in the Civil War times, this particular county had both sides, but they weren't wearing uniforms. They had pro-South and pro-North, and they used to fight each other. Well, they took a bunch of guys who they felt were helping the South or North. I don't think it told which. And they lined them up, including a 12-year-old boy, and executed him. And then it comes up to modern times, and this stuff is still causing problems in the county. And there's quite a, there's a lot of, this is a time when the country folk are quitting selling booze and are getting into dope. It's an interesting film. I'm not going to try to explain it to you, but I think you'd like it. The World Made Straight, Netflix. Well, let's see what ISIS is doing. In a boastful press release after the Paris attacks that left 130 dead earlier this month, ISIS celebrates its victory over the city it called the lead carrier of the cross. Allah grant... To call Paris the lead carrier of the cross is sort of funny to me, but superficially maybe it is. Allah granted victory upon their heads and cast terror into the hearts of the crusaders in their own homeland, the group wrote. The medieval language is a glimpse into the terror group's little-discussed apocalyptic ideology, one that draws on the prophecies written after Muhammad's death that were used to motivate Muslims to battle the caliphs who lived more than 1,000 years ago. While Al-Qaeda occasionally hinted at these doomsday writings foretelling a grand battle with infidels at the end of the world, ISIS has made them the bedrock of its brand. These prophecies are so entwined with ISIS identity that the group has pasted a line from one of them, a caliphate in accordance with the prophetic method. On the coins it has minted, on the badges soldiers wear, and even on the billboard markings, the beginning of ISIS territory. In that prophecy, Muhammad said, here we go again, another crazy ass, said that after a tyrannical monarchy, an Islamic caliphate would return. The formation of the caliphate would lead to a grand battle with the West. In other words, white people. It's not as white as it was then. That would bring along the end of the world. Yeah. Wait a minute here. Let me see. This is getting interesting. Sounds just like what you hear in the churches around here. Same thing. The prophecies ISIS relies on were written dozens and sometimes hundreds of years after Muhammad's death and are not included in the Quran. Same thing as the Christians. As Brookings scholar Will McCants explains in his book, The ISIS Apocalypse, but the prophecies are widespread and believed by many. One poll in 2012 suggested half the Arabs believed in the end of the world was nigh. Well, hell, there's more Christians in the United States that believe that than that. I think almost all of them believe that the end of the world is nigh, and they're trying to make it come to the end, doing everything they can to bring it to the end. Yeah. I'll show you. I'll press this red button and blow your shit out of you. In ISIS interpretation, the figure of the Mahdi, or the rightful guide one, will appear to lead the final battle against Western infidels, called Rome, in northern Syria before the end of days. Doesn't this sound a hell of a lot like the Christians? It sounds almost exactly like the Christians. After the Day of Judgment, only those who supported the Mahdi will be saved. The Mahdi will appear after the establishment of an Islamic caliphate. Medieval caliphs attempted to gin up support for their own battles against the Christian crusaders, claimed to be the Mahdi in the past. In some of the prophecies, Jesus descends from the heavens to assist the Mahdi in his battle against the infidels who are led by Antichrist figure. Well, that was George Bush. George Bush was the Antichrist. No, maybe it was Cheney. Here we go, back into this whack job religion, the Abrahamic religions. I'm telling you, that's the heart of the problem. I mean, it's the heart of the racial problems, the heart of all the problems. Down, way down deep. It's these goddamn crazy religions. ISIS leadership has made a key military decision based upon these prophecies. It fought in the summer of 2014 to take over the small and militarily unimportant village of Dubik, close to Turkey, because it is name-checked in one of the prophecies as a place where the final battle will occur. The infidels are supposed to gather under the 80 flags in this village, before their defeat. ISIS claimed that the apocalypse is nigh is a powerful recruitment tool, not unlike Act Now, 24 hours only, sales pitch. You see, that's what they tell the youth of this country, in these churches, that this is the end of the world, you got to go fight for Jesus. They're going to have blood running up to the bridle bits in the Middle East. And so the Muslims are preaching almost the same thing. The belief that the end of the world is coming and you're going to be fighting on the side of the good guys. When have you heard that before? When the world ends is a powerful motivator, McCants told Yahoo News. Young people going to join ISIS believe that they are participating in an apocalyptic prophecy. The real interesting thing here, from the psychological perspective, is the sense of urgency. Oh, you get that in the Christian game, too. said John Horgan, a psychologist and terrorism expert at Georgia State University. Wonder what he makes in money. Wonder what his salary is. They're sending the message that the forces of evil are about to reach their goals, so you need to act now rather than later. You don't have the luxury of waiting for this to happen. No. You got to do it now. They say that in all the churches before the First World War, before the Civil War, before the Second World War. I mean, you know, it's unknown if the leadership of ISIS really believes in these prophecies. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. All of those imams and preachers, they believe it. Don't you dare question their authority and their honesty and their purity. Or is simply using them to establish legitimacy in the eyes of their supporters. They wouldn't do that just to get guys to follow them. I know guys in the right wing who use the same tactics. And then when their followers get in bad trouble, they forget about them. Yeah, we got to get those Jews right now. So the guy goes out and he gets a Jew, or maybe, because most of them can't identify a Jew. And there they go, off to prison for the rest of their life. Instead of concentrating on the long-range problem, they're talked into the short-range non-solution. ISIS leader Abdu Bakr al-Baghdadi has a PhD in Quranic studies. Now that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee. McCants tracked down examples of the ISIS supporters and members trying to fit current events into the murky and sometimes conflicting timeline of the prophecies. It says here on page 995, Muhammad said it's going to happen on November 17th. By God. Get your Kool-Aid ready. 30 states remain to complete the number of 80 flags that will gather at the beat and begin the battle. One jihadi tweeted, seemingly waiting for nations to sign on to fight ISIS before the last grand battle could occur and usher in the end of the world. Well, I can't go any farther. I'm getting sick. I'm getting absolutely nauseous because this is the same trap people fall in. But for ages, they've fallen into this crap. And like I say, I fell into it too when I was a kid. I didn't have any choice. That was it. And around here today, the kids don't have much choice because there's a church on every goddamn block around here. They're all preaching the same bullshit. I spawned a hell of a lot of sermons when I put that sign up front, Jesus Never Existed, and put ads in the paper, JesusNeverExisted.com. Oh, I'm surprised nobody's taking a shot at me around here. Because these Christians, they can get pretty wild with their cuckoo beliefs. I could have won over the... I remember when I was pretty radical with that Christianity. And if I hadn't been a little bit more in control of myself than a lot of people, I could have gone out and did something like that. Crazy. I'd have thrown my life away for nothing. For the baby Jesus. You know, Donald Trump was raving on about right after the 9/11 buildings fell, that there were thousands of Muslims cheering in the streets. Well, there were thousands of Muslims cheering in the streets, but not in this country. He said they were in New Jersey. He's got to watch his stuff. There were thousands of them. I saw the pictures on TV, so I know it's true. But what he didn't say, which is quite interesting, is that the Jews that were on top of that building not too far from the tragedy were dancing on top of the roof and taking video of the collapse of the buildings. Now, we know that happened because there were witnesses that saw them. So So anyhow, but it's interesting. Donald Trump didn't bring that up, but he brought up and misstated that thousands of Muslims in New Jersey were dancing on around. But he should take that back and say thousands throughout the Middle East jumped up and down and cheered. But I don't think he's going to do it, because I think there's a big flaw with Mr. Trump. And even though we all get a little excited some of the stuff he says, because we'd like to say it too, and we do, but I don't think Mr. Trump can be trusted, because he's a billionaire, number one. I don't trust billionaires. Never going to trust a billionaire. Well, Governor Pence in Indiana did one thing good when he came out and said they didn't want any Syrians. One guy was moving into the state with his family, a Syrian, and they decided to move to Connecticut. Well, there's a group down in Indianapolis, Indiana, that's pushing for all this migrant stuff coming into the state. So I said, look, you give us all the white ones, and we'll ship all the non-white ones out. Such a deal? I'm waiting for their reply. Well, what the hell is this Liberty Israel lobby? Almost said Liberty lobby. Willis Carto bit the dust, so that's gone. That's been gone for quite a while. The major organizations that comprise the Israel lobby are well known. The American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. They never mentioned B'nai B'rith. I had to add that in there. The American Jewish Committee, the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, and Christians United for Israel. All are well known, benefiting from large budgets and staffs. They're extremely effective, having excellent access to politicians and the media to promote their points of view. That's all. It's very innocent. And are, as a group, regular visitors to the White House, recently renamed the Black House. AIPAC is without doubt the most powerful lobby in the United States that is focused on a foreign policy issue. Before I go on, I used to have fun in Southern California from time to time, because they used to advertise the B'nai B'rith meetings. That's the part that the right wing never want to talk to you about. Well, maybe some do. But the B'nai B'rith is the secret Masonic, at least part of their stuff is secret. It's Masonic, and it's worldwide, and it's everywhere. And if you used to be able to look in the big papers like New York and see hundreds of meetings of the B'nai B'rith, they have their little clubs all over the country. A lot of small towns even have a B'nai B'rith. But you notice how they only talk about the ADL. Well, the Anti-Defamation League, like I've told you many times before, is nothing but the action legal arm, the Jesuits of the B'nai B'rith. They're the guardian people. Well, I used to go into these, when I'd see one advertised, I used to go into the meeting, usually held in a synagogue, and just sit down and listen. I wasn't rude. I didn't wear a swastika. I didn't ask a bunch of embarrassing questions. I just sat there, and I smiled. And once in a while, I'd be recognized. Like one night, I went, and the ADL leader from San Diego that hated my guts. but he was cool that night. Oh, we want to welcome Mr. Metzger into our meeting. And I smiled and like that. And that's the way you handle it. You know, too many right-wing types, you know, conservatives, they go crazy. They want to immediately fight, you know. So I find more by just being cool. But I noticed that not long after that one meeting I went to, they quit advertising in the paper that they were having a meeting. So I guess there was something going on there that they didn't want me to know about. However, there wasn't any, at the meeting I went to, I didn't hear anything. I didn't even ask them whether they drank the blood of little babies back in the mid dark ages, you know. Okay, the institutional Israel boosters are in turn backed by a cluster of think tanks and institutes that spout a relentless pro-Likud line. That's the right-wing Jews in Israel. That's Nitwit is in that party. They are very militaristic, and they, I think they borrowed a lot of things from the National Socialist Party. They include the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. That sounds like a Marxist deal. The Emergency Committee for Israel. The American Enterprise Institute. The Hudson Institute. Brookings and Washington Institute. And the Near East Policy. For Near East Policy. In a recent op-ed in the National Interest, formerly the Nixon Center, Why Israel Fears Containment of a Nuclear Iran, written by two Israelis with government ties, illustrates to what extent spokesmen for Tel Aviv have access to the media across the political spectrum to make their points while contrary views rarely surface. Well, that's Jewish free speech. We talk, you listen. It would be difficult to imagine a similar piece appearing advancing Iranian views on Israel, for example, and one might well question whose national interest is being promoted by providing a platform to current and former foreign government officials. And backing the think tanks up are the enablers in the media who suppress stories critical of Israel and consistently editorialize supporting policies favoring Tel Aviv. Israel ambassadors uniquely regularly write op-eds for publications like the Washington Post and the New York Times. Prominent among the consistently pro-Israel media are the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch publications in general, and magazines like Mortimer Zuckerman on U.S. News and World Report. But it would be fair to say that nearly all mainstream media outlets are to some extent wary of offending Israel and its backers. Oh. But as professors John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt noted in their groundbreaking expose of the Israeli lobby, the lobbying effort extends well beyond the organizational level to include Friends of Israel, who labor assiduously and voluntarily at the state and local levels, as well as at universities and from within professional organizations, to maintain a positive viewpoint on Israel while promoting a negative narrative regarding its increased numbers of critics, those bastards. Most recently, they have been focusing on halting the growth of the BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, particularly in attempts to use lawfare to make such activity illegal when it singles out Israel. Israel's friends quite rightly see Congress as their major ally in keeping the United States Israel-friendly. So much so that Pat Buchanan once dubbed America's legislative body as Israeli-occupied territory. And so it remains, with legislation favorable to Israel passing by unanimous consent, voice votes, or grossly lopsided margins when a tally actually takes place. The White House, too, is into the charade that Israel is a major U.S. ally and friend. In spite of mounting evidence that Tel Aviv consistently spies on Washington, is not interested in any peace process with the Palestinians, it works against genuine American interests. I always like that term, American interests, whatever that the hell that is. I have recently obtained a handout memo relating to a congressional race in Virginia and illustrates how the process works at the political entry level. Congressman Jim Moran has announced that he will not seek re-election in the heavily Democratic district that encompasses Alexandria, Virginia. Moran has fallen afoul of the pro-Israel establishment by telling attendees at a 2003 anti-war forum, quote, "If it were not for the strong support of the Jewish community for this war with Iraq, we would not be doing this," unquote. He added that Jewish leaders were influential enough to change the course of U.S. policy. Well, I'm shocked. I'm surprised, man. Moran inevitably apologized for those remarks, which these guys who say these things always do. But the damage was done, and he was considered to be unreliable on the issue of Israel, a view reflected in the handout which quoted Debbie Leenick, director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Greater Washington, asserting that Moran had been lacking the nuances of understanding the peace process. Dumb shit. It is crucial that the next representative from the 8th District be a strong supporter of the bandit state. The handout described a Jewish Community Relations Council political forum for the 8th District that was to be held on May 18th in Alexandria at the Council's Early Childhood Learning Center. All prospective candidates for the 8th District were invited to participate to present their positions on various issues of interest to those attending. The access to the event was by paid tickets only, presumably to permit screening to control the makeup of the audience. The handout again quotes Leinick as stating that all area synagogues will be asked to participate, even if they are not in the voting district. The memo suggests that someone at the forum might ask every candidate to publish his or her signed Israel position paper, which AIPAC requires all candidates for office to personally sign. It also recommends that signs be placed on the street outside demanding release of the paper and notes that if there should happen to be demonstrators present, they will not be allowed to block the entrance, which is behind the building on a private property. The Northern Virginia Council might well be more than usually politically active and is unlikely to have a counterpart in most congressional districts, but the handout reveals how AIPAC has an impact on all viable congressional candidates, often before they are even nominated. Once nominated, the candidates go through a vetting process in which they meet with AIPAC officials and are asked to write or sign a position paper on Israel if they have not already done so. Many of the papers are subsequently highlighted on the AIPAC website. Few, if any, candidates refuse to cooperate because to do so would mean that AIPAC and its friends would find and fund an opponent and use their media access to distort the politician's record. This type of blackballing most recently occurred in the case of Congressman Walter Jones of North Carolina, who was on the receiving end of a vicious and well-funded campaign because he is anti-war candidate strongly opposed to the pro-Israel establishment. Wow. To be sure, Americans have a constitutional right to both demand and to know and challenge the views of those running for office, but the important thing to note here is that the discussion is not about health care, immigration, or government programs. It is rather about unconditional support of the policies of a foreign country. I can think of no other advocacy group in the United States that is comparable to the Israeli lobby in terms of its promotion of positions that are demonstrably not beneficial to the United States, with the only possible exception of being the prominent Cubans in the Congress who vet candidates based on their willingness to continue to punish the regime in Havana. The Cubans, unlike the Israeli firsters, have, however, only regional impact, mostly concentrated in Florida. Though it is interesting to note that they, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Elena Ross Litherton, Mario Diaz-Balart, Joe Garcia, and Robert Mendez, are also all passionate supporters of Israel. Americans really have little choice when it comes to Congress and Israel, as anyone who refuses to cooperate with AIPAC is unlikely to find himself in the running. There should at least be some awareness of what happens routinely to prospective candidates to ensure conformity with the lobby's viewpoint. If unconditional loyalty is a foreign country, is a sine qua non for election to Congress, perhaps there should be some discussion on what that is likely to mean to the promoters of such policies. Should be held accountable when they produce a bad result, as they did in Iraq, and are promising to do a vis-a-vis front. I don't know what's that. Oh, vis-a-vis Iran. It's one thing to be all for Israel, an abandoned state, due to cultural or familial affinity, or even as an abstraction, but it's quite another to persist in a view when it does genuine harm to the United Caucasus States of America, the Israel's first state, regarding which a case certainly can and has already been made. Gee whiz, you mean the Jews are controlling the Congress? And the Jews are controlling the Senate? And the Jews are controlling the elections? And the Jews are controlling the churches? And the Jews are controlling the movies? Well, maybe some of those right-wingers are right. We are surrounded by the kikes, and it got us by the ganoids. Well, boys and girls, that's it for now. This is a Moon's Day. We're off to another week. The 23rd, and it's running about 30 degrees now. It's warmed up a little bit, so I'll see you tomorrow.
Wall Street here. It's Sunday, the 1st of August.